This is Evolutionary Radio. This is your host, Trevor Caritzen. As always, I have Steve Smee joining me.
Yeah, we're here. We're ready for another show. What you been up to these days?
Monday night, we are live from the Evolutionary Radio headquarters. I was camping this weekend, which was brutal. I am not a camper, and doing that in winter just made it even more miserable. But it was a young adults Bible retreat. It was a lot of fun. I'm just not a camper.
Yeah, you should just go out there with no food, no water, and just see if you can survive.
I'd be dead in 5 minutes.
No, you'd survive. You're a smart guy. You'd have to make fire.
You'd freeze to death here in Winnipeg.
Well, you'd have to make a fire.
Yeah, I don't know. Like
you'd be still very cold, yeah, but yeah, not a good time to go, I guess.
No, but it was still fun.
Yeah, so we have some cool topics ahead.
So the first question, this comes from the sponsor of the radio, sarms1.com. They came back in business and now they're selling their products as capsules. So everyone has been asking, you know, SARMs, I thought they could only be legally sold as a research chemical liquid. Are SARMs in capsules, are they still legit? So that is still true. This is basically what happened. SARMs1.com could not get a credit card merchant. So now they're basically going underground and they're only accepting Bitcoins as payment. So because they're not using a credit card merchant to process their SARMs, to process their payments, they can sell the SARMs in whatever format they use. So they decided to use capsule just because it's easier. You don't have to worry about taste or anything like that. So it's still true. If you want to use a credit card merchant to sell SARMs, they have to be sold as a research chemical liquid. If you're going to go the underground route, so if you're going to only accept, you know, things like Bitcoin, Western Union, PayPal, things like that as payment, then you can sell the SARMs however you want. So depending on the source, yes, SARMs and capsules are still legit. Steve, have you used SARMs one since they've started selling things in capsules? I have not yet.
I'm going to be running some of their products pretty soon. I'm in the process of doing that, so I'll definitely keep everyone abreast of the situation. But yeah, it's really exciting. I really think that the product is going to be a lot better. You know, the problem is, you know, liquids, I really hate using liquids because, I mean, it tastes like shit. They freeze, you know, through the mail, they crash, they freeze, the vials break. And, you know, the post office really doesn't want people shipping any type of liquid because if it does break, you know, that's a problem. The shipper can get in trouble for that. You're not supposed to ship anything that's in liquid form. So this is going to be a lot easier. Basically, they're going underground. They're going to be overseas. So when you order it, it's just like ordering anything that's underground. So you're going to use Bitcoin. You're going to use Western Union. It's going to be anonymous. You know, so it's going to be, you don't have to worry about your wife finding your credit card, whatever. These SARMs companies that are still operating, they're, you know, it's basically, I called this over a year ago. I said that this would happen. All these research chemical companies are slowly starting to shut down. What's happening is that processors and the government, the U.S. government, is basically eliminating these research chemicals. They're basically wiping them out. So they've been raiding them. Enhanced Athlete got raided. So Enhanced Athlete now also went underground overseas. But those are crooks. You never want to use that company. They're scumbags. Both the people who run that company have criminal histories. So they're basically a criminal enterprise. So you don't want to use them. So I'm really excited about SARMS 1 coming back, and hopefully they'll be a really good sponsor on our website. So I'm really looking forward to using their products in capsule form, because I really hated using the liquids.
I was actually emailing back and forth with Boston Lloyd, because he has a research peptide site. And I was asking, you know, are you having any problems with your credit card merchant? And he said he's having no problems at all. But I guess his partner knows the credit card merchant account, and they've been buddies for like 20 years. So I guess if you have an in, you can still find credit card merchants. But what was happening is so many people were placing orders and then I guess having buyer's remorse and then canceling the charge on their credit card or canceling their credit cards so that the payment wouldn't go through, or they would be getting bunk products and they would try to fight with the credit card company to refund them. So basically the credit card company just said, hey, this isn't worth our hassle. So they kind of just said, we want nothing to do with this industry at all. And they kind of just dropped all research chem sites. As far as I know, Boston Lloyd is the only one who still has a credit card merchant. I think every
those are called chargebacks. And what happens, porn sites, supplement companies, you go down a list, the high risk businesses, the ones that are very high risk to get chargebacks. If you are the company and you get chargebacks, the processor will hit you with a fine, $25, $50 for every chargeback. So not only do you have to refund the money, but you also get a penalty on top of that. But here's the thing. The fees are so ridiculous when you're using a high-risk merchant that it really makes it difficult to even make money. So, so a lot of these research chemical companies, even if they are able to get a high-risk merchant, it's still because of the chargebacks and because of the high fees associated with it, makes it very difficult to even stay in business. So things are changing in the country. And, you know, a lot of people, you know, the thing is, you can bitch about it or you can stop voting for fascists to represent you, you know? So I don't want to hear people bitching and then you ask them who they voted for and they voted for a fascist. Don't vote for fascists and, you know, you won't get that. So, I mean, I don't want to hear people bitching. We had the previous administration look the other way on everything, on pot, on steroids. There weren't any steroid busts, and now we're having steroid busts all the time. They're busting people for importing raws. They're busting people for everything. So I don't want to hear people bitch.
Nothing like Steve throwing some political comments into the podcast. But yeah, it's just how it is. I mean, the board sponsor, NeedToBuildMuscle.com, they used to sell a natural testosterone booster called HC Generate. It had nothing even slightly gray area in it, but because it was called HC Generate, people were associating it with HCG, and they had to change the name because they couldn't even find a credit card merchant just because the product name was similar to HCG. So they're really, really cracking down. Our second topic is we had a listener question. He's a high school level basketball player. He's really trying to make it into the NBA. He's Division I college ball. And he was wondering, what is the detection time of SARMs? I'll answer the detection time question. And then Steve, what are your thoughts on someone in high school using SARMs? So I guess he's probably 17 or 18. He's playing Division I. So, I mean, he doesn't suck. So he might actually make it to the NBA. But I'll let Steve talk about that. The detection time of SARMs is not known. These compounds are so new that this is not something that has been studied in depth. Anyone who tells you that they know the detection time of SARMs, they're lying to you. If you look at the literature, if you look on PubMed, this has never been studied. You can guess what the detection time is, but the actual numbers have not been studied. Based on the half-life of SARMs, I would estimate the detection time to be 3 to 4 weeks. I've had clients use SARMs who are drug tested, and they stopped them 6 weeks before their competition just to be safe. And there's been no issues so far. No one has tested positive. So that's the detection time, 3 to 4 weeks. And again, that's just my guess. No one knows the actual detection time. Steve, what are your thoughts on a Division I basketball player using SARMs at the age of probably 17, 18?
We saw a guy, University of Florida, one of their quarterbacks, got busted for using LGD a few years ago. That's the most famous case of a college athlete using SARMs. So, yeah, we do know that the NCAA does test for them, as does, you know, WADA, for the Olympics. And so here's the thing. It's hard. I hate to make generalizations, but I'll put it this way. I think 21 is the age that you should use SARMs. And I think probably like 28 or 29 should be the age you should use steroids. So those are my age numbers. Now, I mean, it can vary from there. It also depends on, the thing is, like, GW51516 isn't a SARM, so it doesn't affect your hormones. So I would argue that, if you're under 21, you could run GW. I would say, if you're 18 or over, you could run GW because it's not hormonal. But the risk associated with that is, what if you're really running a pro hormone, and what if you're really running something that isn't GW? Maybe it might be a different something else, a pro hormone, a SARM, something else that is suppressive to your HPTA. So you want to make sure you're using legitimate GW. And I don't know. I mean, you want to make sure you have the right source for it, for sure. But I mean, I didn't use any PEDs when I was in high school. I mean, for me, like, I didn't know if other people were using them. I mean, I never saw anything go on, so I don't know. So, I mean, Trevor, did you see anything? Because I don't recall it even being, but you're a lot younger than me, so.
It's very popular. I'm the nutritionist for a junior hockey team here in Canada. So all the kids are 18, 19, and steroid usage is rampant. Even stuff that would be like, even stuff that would make their performance worse. Like, it amazes me. These are hockey players, and some of them are using things like D-ball. But we're just in a society where everyone wants a quick fix, right? Before someone even starts a fat loss diet, they buy a fat burner. You know, what's the first thing people do? You know, hey, I'm gonna start lifting weights, I'm gonna start getting bigger. Before they even buy a gym membership, they go to a GNC and buy some protein powder and some weight gainer or some creatine or things like that. It's just society today. You know, we all want some magic pills, some magic supplements, something like that. I get emails all the time from, guys who are 18, 19, playing high-end sports, asking me what my thoughts are on things like Carderin, SR9009. Here's the thing. They're not hormonal, so it's not going to affect you going through puberty or anything like that. I personally feel like they're safe to take, but my advice to them is you really got to ask yourself, do you really think you're going to make it into the NHL, NBA, whatever sport you're playing, right? Be realistic. Really think about this long term. Like, you're very young to be messing around with anything. I tell them, if there's a good chance, you can make it into the NBA, then I would do it. I would use, Carderin, SR9009, Nutriball. Those are the three that won't affect testosterone production, so I would use those. If realistically you have a 1 in 1,000 shot, don't do it. It's not worth wasting your money. It's not worth getting any possible health complications. Like, it's just, you're too young. You know what I mean? So that's what I tell them, because you got to think of the pros and cons of stuff. Like, making it to the NBA, then, you're making multiple $1 million per year. Then it was worth it. Then, if you jeopardize your health a little bit, it's worth it because you're making your living off of your body. But I mean, if you're just some average Division I player, you're never going to make it to the NBA. So it's not worth spending the money and, you know, possibly risking your health. Steve, are you kind of on the same wavefront as I am?
I mean, the thought that anybody thinks they actually make the NBA is absurd. I mean, chances of making the NBA are so slim, it's ridiculous. I mean, think about it. Each NBA team only has 13 players. So you multiply that by how many teams there are. I believe there's about 30 teams. So 30 times 13 players per team. I mean, that's how many people make up the NBA, and then how many people play college basketball. There are so many college basketball teams. So I mean, the chance of you making the NBA is so minute. So, I mean, it's just absurd. And, you know, it's a whole other topic. I mean, if you're playing any college sport, finish your degree and, you know, don't like think that you have a chance to make it to the pros. If you do, if you are lucky enough to make it to the pros, then that doesn't mean anything. You know, you have still have to make the roster, and you still have to, you know, make the team.
Actually, what you said is really smart. You should actually save it for your ace in the hole, because then if you make the team, you have to remember you're then going to be the worst player on the team. You're the rookie. You're the new guy. So what Steve suggests is actually really smart. You know, don't use anything. If you can make the team naturally, then you know you have what it takes. And then when you're on the team, that's when you should start using the performance-enhancing drugs, because then the pressure's on. You want to make the roster. You want to actually earn yourself a spot where you're playing for the team for, you know, a couple of years, and you're going to, you know, make a good salary for a couple of years.
Well, if you're talking about NBA specifically, they're running HGH. So, I mean, that's what they're running. They're running HGH. They're not really running that many anabolic steroids. So that's on the table. But, like, okay, let's say the NFL – just because you get – let's say you're a late-round draft pick or you're undrafted free agent and you actually make the week one roster, okay, you're not making that much money. You know, if you count taxes, union fees and stuff, you might only be walking away with $150,000 net for that entire first year you're in the NFL. And then guess what? They might keep you a year or two, and then you're cut. Because the average NFL – lifespan is only 3 years. So let's say you're there for 2 years, which would be incredible to be on a roster. You're only walking away with $300,000 in your pocket. That's nothing. You'll blow through that so fast. So, I mean, focus on your education, number one. That's a whole other topic for another day.
Long story short of it, if you're going to use SARMs, Carterin, SR9009, and Nutribol do not affect testosterone production. Those are the three you should use. I would not use anything that will suppress natural testosterone production, even if it's just mild, until you're at least, you know, 21, 22, 23. Our next topic is fruit healthy. This is something that always amazes me. Literally today, I was in the lunchroom. I'm sitting next to this guy. He's eating Subway for lunch. Me and Steve, we've talked about the fact that Subway is not healthy, even though people think it's healthy. And I just finished my lunch, and as like kind of like, I guess you would say dessert, I was eating an apple. And he basically says to me, "Aren't you worried about all the sugar in that apple?" And I'm kind of just like shocked. I'm like, this guy's eating Subway. He's eating processed meats, processed cheeses, high fat condiments and bread. And he's asking me if I'm worried about this apple. Steve, what are your thoughts on fruit?
So I brought Lauren Lockman for Raw. I don't know if you had a chance to listen to that episode, Trevor, but I actually asked them about this because I actually had a doctor friend of mine. I was talking to him about dieting, and as mentioned, you know, I eat fruit, and he's like, "Fruit's still sugar." That was what he told me. And I was just like, you know what? Everyone has their own opinion. I kind of dropped it. There's no point in getting in a discussion with a doctor because they already know everything, you know? So they're smarter than everyone else in their mind. So I asked Laura Mockley, how come doctors tell their patients not to eat fruit, like who are diabetics and stuff? And I mean, he kind of explained it. But it is funny because you have something called the glycemic index and you have the glycemic load. And according to the glycemic index, a watermelon is a 77 out of 100. That's bad, right? There's a lot of sugar. But the glycemic load of a watermelon is only 4. So how much of a blood sugar spike are you getting from the watermelon? Not very much. You'll get way more of a blood sugar spike eating cereal, bread, like your buddy who's eating Subway. Those give way more of a glycemic load. So I think it's hilarious when people actually, like diabetics, they're like scared to eat fruit, but they'll go and eat Subway because Subway, the bread in Subway doesn't have sugar in their mind or something. I don't know. As if that's healthy. So
after my workout today, I had a vegan protein shake. I had some oatmeal, and then in the oatmeal, I added in some frozen blueberries. I kind of do it as a way to like cool down the oatmeal. So I have instant oatmeal. I pour hot boiling water over it. I let it sit for like 5 minutes so the oatmeal soaks up the water. And then I add in the blueberries, and then it kind of puts it all to like room temperature. But because I knew we were doing this podcast, and because I knew we had this listener question, I looked at the bag of blueberries, a cup and a half of blueberries. So that's quite a bit, a cup and a half. Like that's a pretty big serving. 140 grams has 12 grams of sugar. So 12 grams of sugar isn't very much, and it also has 4 grams of fiber. So a cup and a half of blueberries, which is it's a lot. Like if you take out a measuring cup and you look, cup and a half, that's a pretty big serving, had 80 calories, only 12 grams of sugar and 4 grams of fiber. Pretty much negligible. I mean, 80 calories, that would be like 6 Triscuits. What would fill you up more, a cup and a half of blueberries or, you know, like 6 soda crackers? So I think fruit gets a really bad rap because of the whole fructose thing. We have to remember only about 40% of the sugar in fruit is fructose. So of that 12 grams of sugar, you'd be getting about 4 or 5 grams of fructose, which is pretty minuscule. It's pretty much irrelevant. So fruit, in my opinion, perfectly healthy. It actually is healthy. I recommend eating it. A lot of fruits have less calories actually than vegetables. Like if you look at a cup of corn, a cup of corn has twice as much calories as a cup of strawberries or a cup of watermelon. Now, the issue is things like fruit juices, dried fruits, those like fruit snack things that people eat. There's a problem with fruit juice, the problem with dried fruit, the things like that is very, very calorie dense. With fruit juice, all the fiber is removed. A 500 milliliter glass of orange juice, so that's 2 cups of orange juice, has the juice of roughly 7 medium oranges. So that's the problem with fruit juice, is there's no fiber. If you ate 7 oranges, you'd be pretty full. Like, I don't know about you, Steve, but if I ate 7 oranges, I probably wouldn't want to eat anything for a couple hours, but I can drink.
I could eat 3 or 4 tops. I couldn't eat more.
I like oranges. I could eat 7 oranges, but I'd be pretty full. Like that'd be dinner for me. You know, if I had like maybe a couple hard boiled eggs and 7 oranges, like I wouldn't be hungry for a couple eggs for a couple hours. But I can drink 2 cups of juice, and I mean, I'm not even full in the slightest. If anything, I'm hungrier after because I get that sweet taste in my mouth, and then I want to actually eat something. Go ahead, Steve.
No, finish your thought. I was gonna say
same thing with dried fruit, is it's so calorie dense because all the water's removed. I mean, yeah. You can eat like 1,000 calories of trail mix or dried fruit, and like it doesn't even really feel like you ate anything. So that's the issue. So whenever I tell clients or whenever someone emails me, you know, what are your thoughts on fruit? I say fruit, as long as it's whole fruit, unprocessed, have as much as you want. But fruit juice, dried fruit, fruit snacks, anything like that, that's not allowed.
Yeah, you know what? You're not going to get fat off eating watermelon and cantaloupe. I mean, you're really not. The most watery fruits are the best ones. The berries, the watermelon, the cantaloupes, the mango. Mango is high in sugar, right? It must be bad. No. Papaya. I can't have papaya. I'm allergic to papaya. Papaya is great. Any watery fruit, if it's dried fruit, you're taking away all the water out of it. So you're just left with the sugar. But here's an interesting thing. And this is something that Lauren Lockman always says. And this makes sense. If you eat a big steak or any size steak, It goes in your body and it gets the body, turns it into sugar to give you energy. Because we, as humans, we run on sugar. That's how, you know, we run. That's how we tap into energy, right? Talk about the big picture here. If you have a watermelon, it's instantly in your body. Your body doesn't have to process it. So it's instant in your body. And it's got fiber, so it's easy to digest. And it's very hydrating. So don't tell me that fruit is bad when you're sitting there eating a fucking 12-ounce steak. And, you know, so that your body has to process into sugar when I'm eating a watermelon, which is already doing the job for me. So, you know, watery fruits, guys, don't be scared to eat them. Don't listen to these morons who tell you that, you know, fruit's bad for you, it's got sugar. I went through that myself. I kind of listened to the bullshit. And, you know, I kind of, you know, it's, I went back to eating a lot of fruit again because of the knowledge that I've gained over the past couple of years. So I really think it's been part of the reason that I've had so much success losing so much body fat and changing my health.
Steve, I'm going to say one more thing, yeah, and then I'll let you introduce our next three topics. I have lost about an inch or two belt notches off my stomach the last probably 60 to 70 days without even trying. What do you think it was due to?
You went to more of a plant-based diet.
Correct.
Yeah. But like what I said earlier about the steak, the body having to work extra hard to turn that steak into sugar, is that accurate?
It's more complicated than that.
I know it's complicated, but doesn't it make more sense? Like if we're running on glucose, if you have a watermelon, it's like instant nutrition versus a steak that has to get converted. So it's just extra work for the body. That it's going to give you energy to not put your body through extra work. I know it's complicated, but to me, it makes logical sense.
Well, that the protein is very hard for your body to digest, right? So all these people, you know, who are suffering from stomach bloating, you know, constipation, things like that, they're probably just eating too much meat. I'm not saying don't eat meat. I'm just saying reduce your portion size and eat more plants, eat more whole grains, eat more fruits and vegetables. And you'll notice your digestive system feels better. Your energy levels are better. Your waist is going to shrink. You're going to have better bowel movements because you're getting all that fiber and you're not bloated and your digestive system is not run down from all this protein that's really, really hard to digest. You know, it's kind of like how that old bodybuilding myth, like, oh, fish thins your skin. And, you know, if you want to eat nothing, if you eat nothing but fish, you're going to get, you know, abs. Part of that's because fish is really easy to digest. So your stomach gets tighter because you're not bloated. Whereas, you know, things like red meat, it's very hard for your body to digest because it's very high in fat. Steve, I'll let you introduce our next topic.
Well, I read something that Arnold actually is a vegan now. He said he hasn't had dairy in
many years.
Arnold Schwarzenegger. He hasn't had dairy in many, many years, and he's a vegan now.
Yeah, do you want me to talk about vegan diets? Do you want to add that in as a topic?
Right now?
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
Okay, we're gonna this is spur of the moment. This is evolutionary radio spur of the moment topic, vegan diets. So I'm a big everything in moderation type guy. I don't think totally eliminating animal products from your diet is healthy. The problem for that is that there is no vegan source of vitamin B12. So if you're following a completely plant-based diet, you're going to eventually become deficient in vitamin B12 because there is no vitamin B12 source. So I think, you know, for optimum health, following a primarily plant-based diet is great, but I still would include some lean meat, some poultry, some fish, things like that. But just smaller quantities. And again, the source of the animal products is very, very important. You want to make sure it's grass-fed beef, wild-caught fish, free-range eggs, free-range poultry, things like that. Another thing is if you're eating only vegan sources, you're getting ALA as your omega-3 fatty acid, which is not absorbed as well as the EPA and DHA absorbed in fish. Steve, I know you're a big fish guy. Fish has so many nutrients. One more thing is that there's two types of iron in the body. There's heme iron and non-heme iron. Heme iron is the iron that is found in animal sources. So that'd be things like red meat, clams. Clams are actually a very high source of iron. Liver, things like that. It is absorbed much better than non-heme iron, which is iron that is found in vegetables, things like spinach. So the reason so many vegans, and especially female vegans, become B12 and iron deficient is because they're only getting non-heme iron, which is not absorbed near as well as heme iron, which is the animal source of iron. Any questions, Steve, about vegan diets? I know a lot of people are experimenting with vegan diets. And I think it's great. What I would do is pick a couple of days per week and follow a vegan diet on those days. And then on the other days, still consume animal products, make sure they're ethically raised, make sure they're from the right sources, and just limit the quantities. Like I used to eat 10 to 12 ounces of, you know, steak per meal. Now, if I have steak, it'll be like 6 ounces. Like I cut that portion size in half and I don't have any of the bloating or digestive issues.
I wouldn't be so quick, Trevor, to just say, you know, vegans have B12 deficiencies, because most people with B12 deficiencies eat lots of meat.
And, no, 100%. Yeah. Like, yeah, a lot of people.
So, I mean, don't think that it's
not just vegans. Yeah. I'm just saying.
I actually think it's funny though, because, you know, like a lot of vegans, you know, who have tested their B12, it's been fine. They have normal levels of B12, and I don't really know enough about it to really give you an answer as to why. But why do you think that is? I wonder if it has something to do with our own bodies are capable of producing these vitamins, and we don't optimize what our bodies are capable of.
You can't produce vitamin B12. Your body does circulate it though. So you have vitamin B12 stores, but your body cannot produce vitamins and minerals. You have to take them in daily.
I'll have to look into it, because I know Lauren Lachman Talks has some videos on his page. I don't know if you've seen them, but he, because he just has a plant-based diet, and he says that, you know, he does not have no B12 issues at all.
Here's the thing. There actually is vitamin B12 in dirt. So if you have like a garden and you're like eating carrots straight from the dirt or straight from the ground, and there's still a little bit of dirt on them, you'll get vitamin B12 through that.
If they're sucking up the B12 out of the ground though, if they're organic, wouldn't that provide you B12 if you're eating?
The vegetable itself will not contain vitamin B12, but the soil will. So that's what the argument is they would say, well, prehistoric humans, they didn't have the same washing techniques we did. So when they would pull a carrot out of the ground, there would still be dirt on it, and they would eat the carrot with the dirt on it. So actually you can get vitamin B12 from eating soil. And actually eating soil is actually really good for you. It's full of nutrients.
Well, we actually, if you actually look this up, we actually do eat soil. We don't even know it. I'm not sure what I heard a number, like we actually eat several cups of soil a year.
The problem is, Steve, is that most of the soil we're using nowadays is nutrient deficient, and it's full of fertilizers and things like that. We're not actually rotating crops. Like the soil we have today is not the soil we had 1,000 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, you're speaking to the converted on that. The Dust Bowl was because the farmers in the plains, you know about the Dust Bowl?
No, enlighten me.
Yeah, the Dust Bowl was in the United States during mostly the Depression. And basically the farmers, they destroyed the land so badly that the topsoil was gone, because they basically depleted the land because they were growing all the crops. So the Dust Bowl, when there would be winds blowing across the plains and the soil was so dry and there was no topsoil, it would cause like sandstorms across the central states. But then they actually found out underground that there was underground rivers below the plains. So then they started to tap into that, and they started blowing, you know, water all over the soil, and that kind of helped the soil come back. So, but once that underneath the ground actually dries up, which I don't know, maybe 20 years from now, maybe 50 years from now,
guess what's going to happen? That soil is going to be destroyed. So probably Alberta up there where you are, probably the same problem. It's farmers probably destroy the land up there.
You know what's really killing all the land in Alberta? The oil refinery.
Yeah, I can imagine.
It's bad, man. Like, I've been to some of the oil rig sites. It's horrible what they're doing to the environment. But
yeah, but remember, we got to save those 200 jobs, you know? Without those 200 jobs, it's like the coal miners in the United States. We got to save those, you know, 50 jobs for the coal miners, you know, so they can have lung poisoning when they're 40 years old. And in turn, we got to destroy the environment to make sure that, you know, those jobs are saved. That's our priorities. Back to the political topic.
Let's get back to the podcast. Introduce, we have two more topics left.
Yeah, we have two more topics. So the next one is an interesting one that gets debated on social media. Is losing body fat without doing cardio anti-fitness? And I have a running background. So this one, I don't really have an opinion either way on this. I just think that it just depends on the individual person. But I'll let you chime in on this one first, Trevor.
Cardio is an interesting topic, and people think cardio is magic when all it really does is burn calories. Like, you can get the same effect from eliminating calories from your diet. Like, when I focus on fat loss, like when I'm doing like a cutting program or dieting for a photo shoot, I don't really do any cardio. I just eat less. It's two different ways to do the same thing. Now, is cardio good for your health? Yes, absolutely. Does cardio help eliminate stress? Is it good to lower cortisol levels? 100%. Cardio has a lot of health benefits associated with it. But if we're talking just body fat, you really don't have to do cardio. Now, if you're trying to get to bodybuilder, you know, body fat levels, we're talking like 4 or 5%, you're going to be eating so minimal that a lot of people would prefer doing cardio and eating more. But I mean, there's nothing magic about cardio. I mean, I do cardio maybe about twice per week. And I only do it for the health benefits because I stay lean just through following a proper diet. But I do it for the health benefits. Would I say not doing cardio is anti-fitness? No, it's just time management. Like, I have a lot of clients who are...
No, the question is more specifically, is if you lose body fat without doing cardio, is it anti-fitness?
No, like I've dieted people, you know, for bodybuilding competitions who have full-time jobs, wife and kids, you know, are on like the team coach for their kids' soccer game, just like very, very busy people. So for them, rather than have them do an hour of cardio, because their schedule is so demanding, I'll just have them eat less. Same results, but it's just two different ways to do it. You know, whereas if someone else, they got really nothing on the go and they can do a bunch of cardio, they can eat more, but it's really the same thing. It's just calories in versus calories out.
So I have a question for you, Trevor. Your total cholesterol levels, what have they been the past couple of years? I'm sure you've gotten blood work.
They're always in the normal range.
Which is?
Normal range for total cholesterol.
Is under 200, but like when you say normal range, are you like 180? Are you right at 200?
No, I'm more like 120.
Wow, that's low, man.
Yeah.
Even though you haven't used that many steroids though in the past couple of years.
Just TRT.
But when you're using steroids, your cholesterol levels were probably high, correct?
Steroids don't really affect total cholesterol. They affect more HDL and LDL.
Yeah.
It's more diet that affects total cholesterol. But even then, total cholesterol doesn't really matter. Okay, this is a topic in itself. But cholesterol, like total cholesterol, is very genetic. And you have to remember, when they say these normal values, that's for the entire population. So if someone has, you know, a higher level of cholesterol, but they're just a big guy, that doesn't necessarily mean they're unhealthy. They're just a bigger guy, so their total cholesterol levels will be higher. What matters more is your HDL to total cholesterol ratio, and your LDL to total cholesterol ratio, and also the particle size of HDL and LDL. But cholesterol is the structural component of all of our cell membranes. So having more total cholesterol isn't necessarily a bad thing. And then also, cholesterol is the backbone of anabolic hormones like testosterone. So some people with naturally high testosterone levels will have higher total cholesterol because their body is converting so much of that cholesterol to testosterone on a regular basis, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a really good summary for sure.
Okay. Do you want to introduce our last topic?
Okay. So our last, I'm sorry?
I think it's a really good one because I'm going to shock a lot of people with what I'm about to say.
Yeah. So we, last week we talked about what we eat every day. I didn't get a chance to really talk about it, but Trevor, went through what he ate. So I'll start this topic off this time, so Trevor doesn't hog the whole segment, but we're going to talk about what do we drink every day. And then,
dude, I don't even have to chime in. Mine's a given. I live in Canada, so all I drink is Canada Dry.
Canada Dry and maple syrup. That's all you guys drink up there. And Molson Ice.
That's the Canadian cocktail. Canada Dry with a shot of maple syrup. It's like a Jager bomb. That's what we do up here in Canada.
So so it's basically what we drink every day and how to choose water. So let me chime in on these two topics, and I'm curious to hear what Trevor has to say too. So basically what I drink, guys, is I get up in the morning, I like to have 3 scoops of a greens powder, and each scoop of my greens powder is 25 calories. So that's 75 calories, but it's a huge cup of greens powder. It's about a quarter gallon of it. So I'll mix that with water and I'll drink that with a straw. And that's my basically opening the day off with hydration, because when you wake up in the morning, you're going to be dehydrated, especially if you live in a warm climate, especially if you sleep at night, you tend to sweat a little bit, you know, that the humidity and all that. So that really helps hydrate you. I highly recommend right when you wake up hydrating. That's got to be the first thing you do is hydrate. And then throughout the day, I carry water with me everywhere. I got water in my office. I got water by my bed. I got water where the TV is. I got water at work. I got water when I go bicycling. I got a little thing to hold the water. In my car, I always keep bottles of water. I got water everywhere. Okay. If I go to the store, I carry water with me. If I go for a walk, I carry water with me. Just constantly drinking water. Now, what kind of water do I drink? Most of the water that you buy in bottles is really just tap water. And it's a very simple experiment that you can do. Just go to a pool supply store or Walmart, buy chlorine testers, and then you can test the bottled water, and you'll be able to tell that it's got chlorine in it. And if it's got chlorine in it, then it's not really spring water and it's not really filtered. So there are some good brands. Fiji is a good brand. 365 is a good brand, and you can test those out and you'll notice there's no chlorine in them. But what I use at home is I use a filtration system. You can hook it up either to your fridge or hook it up to your sink, or you can basically put water into the little unit and the unit will filter. You have to change the filter every month and a half. That's the only pain in the ass, but it's well worth it and you save a lot of money. So that's what I do. I'll use that filtration system and filter my own tap water. So basically takes out the chlorine, the fluoride, all that crap that's in the water, and it makes my water filtered, and it's very good. So that's what I drink all day. I don't drink tea. I don't drink coffee. I don't drink sports drinks. I don't drink anything else. If I'm sweating a lot, I will add some electrolytes to my water. But other than that, that's what I drink. How about you, Trevor?
Okay. So I just want to follow up on what you said. For any of our listeners who are looking for a really good water filter, don't waste your money on like a Brita. It's useless. Look into Berkeley water filters. That's what they use in third world countries like Africa. You can also buy a fluoride filter for your Berkeley water filter. It reduces lead, chlorine, everything to 0.0001 parts per million. It's basically the best water filter you can buy. They're about $200, but you only have to replace the filters once per year, so it lasts quite a while. I actually don't drink very much water, especially in the winter when it's so cold here in Winnipeg. You really don't crave water, especially like cold water from the fridge. So I drink a lot of herbal teas. In particular, I drink a lot of chaga tea, which is mushroom tea. I drink a tea called holy tea, which is like a dandelion milk thistle tea. I drink a lot of that. I drink a lot of decaf coffee. I really, really enjoy coffee. I make sure to drink decaf though, so I'm not totally stimulated out of my mind. I drink an electrolyte amino acid drink called CardioFlex. It's non-caloric, so I drink that throughout the day to basically get some electrolytes. It's also got vitamin C, coenzyme Q10, things like that. But I really don't drink much water. The only time I really drink water is at the gym. And then like Steve, I also drink, you know, things like green shakes, vegan protein shakes. So I'm getting water by mixing those. But I really don't drink much water. And because I live in such a cold climate where you're not sweating very much, like the only time I'm ever sweating is at the gym, my fluid intake isn't that high. Like I'd say I probably drink about 6 liters per day. Whereas in the summer, it would be more like 10. But in the summer, I'll be drinking more water because I crave water more. So some people don't like water. It kind of amazes me that people don't like the taste of water. But you could do what I do. You know, drink more herbal teas. You could try adding lemon slices to your water. You could try adding cucumber slices to your water. Things like that. Give that a try. Steve, did you hear about the Whole Foods asparagus water thing that totally went viral on social media?
When was that?
So it was like a year ago. Basically, Whole Foods was selling asparagus water. So it was just water with like 2 stigs of asparagus in it, and they were selling it for $6. And then like some comedian was like talking, made like a bunch of jokes about it, and then like his video went viral on YouTube. It was a pretty funny segment.
Huh, but I don't remember that. I thought I may have vaguely remember that. Yeah, I'm not really sure.
I think lemon water is great. So, I mean, if you don't really enjoy the taste of water, slice up 2 organic lemons and just throw them in your water. Go ahead.
You know what's another cool drink is take water and then add unpasteurized apple cider vinegar to it and then add some stevia to sweeten it up. It actually tastes really, really good. That's another thing
you have to be careful about with acidic drinks like lemon water and apple cider vinegar is that it's very hard on your teeth enamel. So if this is something you're going to routinely be drinking, what I would do is I would have that as your drink and then have a glass of regular water. And then after each drink, take a sip of regular water, swish around your mouth and swallow it. Because as much as I love the health properties of apple cider vinegar water, lemon water, things like that, dentists hate the stuff.
Let me ask you this. If you went outside and just grabbed snow off the ground and ate it, couldn't you just do that rather than getting
Seriously, dogs all the time. If you take your dog for a walk, like on a long walk, it'll eat snow when it's thirsty. It's super cute. But yeah, I know you could absolutely do that.
Well, I mean, the snow is like just natural water, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah.
Like, it's the Canadian version of finding a river and taking a sip.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be, that's kind of funny. Yeah.
Yeah.
You can't do that where I live. You can't just go to the ocean and drink salt water. You'd be screwed.
Well, that's salt water. It's a little bit different. I think that's pretty much it, Steve. Do you have any closing remarks?
I think we covered it all. One more closing remark. We talked about fruit earlier, but I mean, if you eat a lot of watery fruits, you'll notice you won't have to drink as much because the watery fruits, something like a watermelon is like 92-93% water. So
96.
Yeah, I've seen anywhere from 92 to 96, but it's a lot of water. So yeah, that's why they call it watermelon. So I mean, yeah, if you eat a lot of watery fruits, then you can't go wrong staying hydrated. But hydration is so important. Like if your body isn't hydrated, it's crucial.
I'm going to give a shout out to my sister just as we're closing off the show here. She sent me a small gift in the mail. There is a box of blueberry superfruit tea. And there's a little note says, I saw this at the grocery store And because you're so fruity, it made me think of you. So thank you for the tea, Vicky. It's very good. I'm glad you think I'm fruity. For your host, Trevor Caritzen, for my co-host, Steve Smee, this has been another episode of Evolutionary Radio. Live your life, look good doing it. Thanks for listening. Thank you.